Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It was on a short walk from Porto's Sheraton Hotel, where the Rangers squad and media were staying, to the small Campo de Bessa, the home to Boavista, that Chris Woods spoke to Chick Young, then of the Evening Times, about his early frustrations at Ibrox. "The Rangers fans have not seen what I can do," he said. "Believe me, I am about to show them. Only against Dundee United in the Skull Cup did I feel that I produced anything like the form I was showing in my days with Norwich. Now I'm settled in, and I know that I am ready to produce performances like my days in England on a more consistent basis. If any supporters are wondering about my inclusion in English international squads, then I can only say to them, watch me go now." Woods almost certainly didn't speak in that tabloid English. You can almost see the Batman quotation marks screaming out of the paper, but it was all clear to everybody that the Rangers' rearguard hadn't quite fully settled into place. Woods was brilliant in Portugal that night, the highlight being an almost impossible stop from João Augusto, but it wasn't until that disappointing 1-1 draw in the next round against Borussia Mönchengladbach that something locked in. Rangers didn't concede a goal for the remaining seven games of 1986 as the penny dropped metaphorically before many were spent literally to finish the job off. Here to discuss that rearguard and that shutout king over the course of December and January of season 86-87, I'm joined by Andy McGowan. Good evening, Andy.
Hi, Martin. Glad to be back on.
And Alan Bradley is here to give that bit more culture than experience perspective. Alan, how are you doing?
I've never been called cultured, but I'm doing okay, Martin. Yeah, looking forward to this one like Andy. Should be a good one, yeah.
Okay, it's December and in January, guys. Again, we're not going to run over every single game. I don't really want that the show to be like that. I just want to pick some things out and some kind of broader themes. But clearly, this defensive solidity takes shape. And the winter in Scotland is a key run of fixtures. We know that. It's never really changed. And this, would provide that Rangers' pursuit of Celtic, because Rangers are still quite a wee bit behind in the championship race at the start of December. The only blip, let's start with a blip, domestically anyway, is a 0-0 draw at Easter Road on the 6th of December. And I want to ask about Souness again. John and David and I touched on this last week. Rangers beat St Mirren 2-0 at Ibrox on the Wednesday night. Not a great night, scrappy performance, but goals from McPherson and David Cooper. But an important night, because Celtic lost at Tynecastle that night as well, meaning that the gap was then closed to 7 points, Rangers with a game in hand. But Souness chose that opportunity to, again, dish out this kind of tough love. It was simply not good enough, he said, and he likened his players to a pub team. Lo and behold, that kind of ringing endorsement brought about this 0-0 draw at Easter Road, some ground that had just been won lost again. We talked about this inconsistency last week. Andy, Alex Cameron, after that weekend, said the title seems out of reach. Souness's impetuosity, I'd like your guys' thoughts on that. It's something we did discuss quite a bit last week. But here's another example of someone who's just like a cat in a hot tin roof. He's just too frustrated.
But Souness at this point is something totally different, and we're kind of enthralled to everything he says, and we kind of lap up this absolute winning mentality. Because for the first day he walks into Rangers, really that's the key word that always comes up, winners, winners, winners. Everybody he signs is a winner. It's the first kind of trait he looks for in his players, and it's starting to be the thrust, the whole motivation within the club is to win, and that this notion that anything less than that is, you know, absolutely unthinkable. I say it was new to Scottish football, probably no new to Scottish football, because it's got echoes of Alex Ferguson. And you spoke about how soon as after that game slated the team, and we've seen obviously Ferguson famously do that before. But it was due for Rangers because it'd been, you know, when was the last time we had anything close to that kind of mentality in the club, in a footballing front? But he was impetuous is the word you used. He was probably more than that. He was angry. Mm. He was a man that was on a mission. We spoke before in previous episodes that, you know, it was his way or the highway. And he sometimes spoke before thinking, you know, for a guy that we now nowadays is a quite an eloquent speaker and quite measured and tempered in his viewpoints on Sky TV. At that point in time, he was an absolute firebrand, I think it's fair to say. And he did say things he regretted. I mean, he punched journalists, let's face it, didn't he? He went toe-to-toe with these guys and there was always only one winner, and it was him. So that was a... It was a trait of his that was running through the club, and it had its very good points, but also it had detriment at times.
Alan, the tough love, the being harsh after good results, I mean, that's a Liverpool thing as well. And his, as I said last week, his Liverpool team, seasoned, hardened, winners, would have responded to that. This Rangers team isn't full of title winners. It absolutely is not. A lot of cup winners in there, but not a lot of title winners. And maybe that was maybe just the wrong way to handle them in those early months.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think later on, and hopefully as we'll get to it, he will learn. Andy makes a really good point as well about the Kenny Alec Ferguson one. I think the way Alec Ferguson did it, though, Alec Ferguson became so more experienced that he would come out without bursts, but he would, it's as if he would know how far he could go with the guys and what the response would be.
Yeah.
You know, either with the players. I think at the moment, Graham Souness, I think he's still learning at this point, Martin.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, I really do. I mean, we'll go to Hibs and we'll get the draw. There's actually a couple of wee changes. We end up with like Dougie Bell and Hugh Burns in because of the squad. Mm. And to be honest with you, obviously we agree with everything Souness says. I feel that even at that point in time, as a supporter, it wasn't like, you know, at the moment there's a big backlash if we draw with anyone. Mm. I remember after that Hibs game thinking we sort of should have beat them. The goalkeepers were really good, but there's still something special. I mean, Souness is coming here. Things are moving in the right direction. But no, your point, Martin, I definitely think he's learning. But at that point in time, I don't think that was the way to play with some of these, I don't know, maybe some of the less experienced players anyway.
Well, that draw took us back to 8 points behind, again, with a game in hand. And as I said, some journalists were writing off these title ambitions. That would be premature. Celtic would have an awful 3 weeks. In December, 3-1-1 draws, actually. The final one of those being away to Clydebank, a team that we were putting many goals past every time we played them, which meant that the chase really was on and was hotting up ahead of New Year. Before the New Year, we'll get to that, of course, was the arrival of Graham Roberts just before Christmas, Andy, for £450,000. David Holmes, who is now the Rangers chairman, following the departure of John Payton in the November, said it was a well-deserved gift, a Christmas present for the fans, for their kind of substantial financial outlay for the season. hard man. He had that tag from Spurs, but as soon as knew exactly what he was getting, he felt he needed another warrior to deal with Scottish football and to harden that mentality that we spoke about. His debut at home to Ibrox, a 2-0 win over Dundee United. Again, as Celtic were drawing, Rangers were winning. Falkirk 4-0, Hamilton away 2-0. And then on the 27th of December, just after Christmas, Dundee United come to Ibrox. Robertson shows maybe both sides to his game. He's involved, absolutely, in creating McCoist's opener. But he's also involved in a rather crunching tackle on Paul Sturridge.
Yep, and before I came on this to record, my dad's upstairs with me and he asked me what my pod was about, and I says, well, it's amongst other things, we're going to be talking about Graeme Roberts and the singing. Now, Graeme Roberts was a hero, my dad, because he was the you know, the hard man. My dad loved him. And I said to him, do you remember his Dundee United, his debut against Dundee United? And the first thing he said was, aye, Sturrock. No. So it just shows you that the impact. No, we know Scottish football fans love the rough and tumble and the light players we endeavour, and sometimes to the detriment of our technical side, we like players that can tackle. Now, Roberts was, at that point in time, it was as if he was born to play for Rangers, because we all knew him for England, you know, played in a really good tournament side, won the FA Cups, won the UEFA Cup. He'd kind of touched the England side a couple of times. And when we signed him, everybody kind of knew him as a hard man. And we were making a team of, I wouldn't say a team of hard men, but the team was in Souness's image. Mm. And this was a guy that was in Souness's image, because, you know, you could practically see that Souness had played against him down south, and was there a mutual respect or whatever, I don't know. But he instantly came into a team. He's built like he's not a big, tall centre half as such. He's probably about 6 foot, but he's extremely stocky, thick-thighed. And his introduction that game, as you say, the tackle was Sturrock, which was, you know, made an impression. But it was the goal, which I'm sure you're going to talk about, which was, I think it's on YouTube, but basically it bulldozes his way through. Mm-hmm. Dundee United, there's no kind of grace or guile about it. He bulldozes through to the penalty box, and at that moment the Rangers fans really, really took up the heart. That was my memory.
I want to expand on that, Alan, because it happens in football. Clubs just, they sign someone, and maybe it is the debut, something happens quickly that there's just this affinity, and it never really disappears, and it seems that way with Roberts. The crowd fell in love with him that day.
Yeah, I mean, we had known about him, as Andy said. I remember watching the UEFA Cup final. I think they won in penalties in the end, but obviously he'd played in FA Cup winning, you know, teams as well. And it was like, it was just a tough tackling, no nonsense kind of British. If you think it kind of Terry Hurlock, but better, you know, at that point in time. That whole physicality as well, which I think they'd been touched on. I remember probably prior to that, when Aberdeen would come and they would basically just out-muscle us, you know, and when it came down to it, they would just be too physical for us. What I loved about this one was the guy was obviously a quality player, but he had that physique as well, and he had the, you know, he could go in there and battle. You then combine him with the likes of Terry Butcher as well. You've then got Souness as well. Derek Ferguson can do a bit. You can see as well how Souness is mixing the quality, but he's also, you know, this kind of controlled aggression. And as Andy said, that first tackle, and then obviously the goal as well, was a bit like the young ones will probably think of Alfie, just kind of bundling his way and bulldozing his, but just the way that he actually made that run through to Billy Thompson. But again, once you've suddenly got Terry Butcher and you've got Roberts together, this really seals up things defensively for us.
Can I just ask about the psychological impact of the Roberts sign, not just in us, but on Celtic as well? This gap is shrinking. It used to be 9 points, and as we finish 1986, it's now 5.
Ironic.
With a game in hand.
Yeah,
and the only thing I want to just mention, the only thing I want to mention, Alan, and both of you can chip in. Roberts, this isn't a panic buy of a team in trouble, who are losing the momentum and say, oh shit, we need to spend more of this money on another international. We haven't really thought about it, but here, this will keep the fans happy. There's a Rangers team that's just closing in and closing in, and on top of that, it's a consolidation. We already look, at the time of signing them, very solid all of a sudden defensively, and we're adding to this. It just seems to me like a kind of compound impact, you know? It isn't a panic buy.
No, I would agree, Martin. I think the thing with, as you say, defensively, we were actually doing not bad, but the beauty of this one, this was that whole, I don't know, fix the roof, you know, while the sun shines, but things weren't too bad. But to me, this was a nice piece in the jigsaw. You know, it's as if Souness had been just waiting to actually do it. Ironically, Celtic had been doing no bad, went to Dubai, came back and draw, I think, the three games in a row after that one. So the momentum as well, we're doing no bad. We've suddenly got this guy. There's just something magical beginning to happen now, and then the momentum will build, you know, from this week onwards.
And Andy, it's buying someone in at Christmas, as I said, when we're in an increasing position of strength, for more money than they've ever spent on any footballer, ever. It seems quite a statement of intent, this signing. This isn't a kind of a big summer move. It's just adding to something.
So all I was going to say was, it was a transfer fee. That was the thing that dropped jaws, because, right, there's no transfer windows back then. You can sign players at any point, but We spoke previously about Butcher, 750 grand. We spoke about Wood, 600 grand. Spending 450 grand, no, quite on a whim, but in mid-season, was quite a statement. And the fact that we're taking a player from a top English club. Spurs were a big team, as they are now. And he was, I don't know if he was quite the captain, it was probably Steve Perriman, but he was the vice-captain, a key player, a hero of White Hart Lane. We've went and picked him up and took him. And it was that kind of, you know, it was a normalisation of that this is the way things are going to be. We're going to buy players at that kind of price range. We're going to buy them for the best teams in England. And it was kind of the question, well, you know, how was Celtic going to compete with that? Because there was no sign that they were going to. So it was a sign of intent, a continued sign of intent, the normalisation that the big things were happening. And apart from the football side, where we'd sign a very good player and a very good defender, it was just the notion that this is where we are now. This is what we do.
This is what we can do. I want to come back to something that the three of us talked about in the show a couple of weeks ago at the start of this season, that I think the story of this season is about influence. It's about the culture being shaped by the manager, but these key signings, Roberts being one. You know, Dave McPherson talks about, you know, he's talking about Butcher, you know, the big man gives everyone around him confidence. You can go on with doing your own thing, knowing that Terry will be there to tidy up should anything go wrong. It's also the same when the boss plays. In fact, the fact that he's totally confident puts us all at ease. And McPherson was talking about earlier in the season that he's learning from Butcher, but that Rangers had tried to play that way under John Gregg, a wee bit more expansive, a wee bit more football team. But the older players at the club at the time, the senior pros, maybe set in different ways, they called the shots, and we weren't going to play like that. Now the senior players are the ones that are guiding the club in, dare I say it, a more kind of progressive direction. And you're soon as, you know, said when I signed certain players, Butcher and the goalkeeper, the lads already at the club responded. I could see that the way they responded to them. And then I got Roberts, who's in the same mould as those two. And then again, he brought the best out in certain individuals. All of a sudden, you were going from players who had been at Rangers maybe too long, been in the company of bad professionals, and all of a sudden, they were winners. That's it. It's bringing these guys in, not to do the job of 11 players, but just to set the tone for the rest.
Yeah, it's all about standards. We mentioned, I think, in the first episode that Andy and I were on, you know, in terms of the kind of standards and so on. And this is very much doing that. It's the whole, I don't know, the whole culture and so on is back up to this Rangers way. And again, you've got leaders you've just added another one there. Ian coming up here from England. Okay, he says, I'm coming up for the manager, coming up to win things and so on, to play in Europe. But, I mean, this guy through and through ain't going to accept defeat. You've got your big butcher as well there. And this is spreading on to others. I think the good thing as well with some of the young ones too, with your Derek Fergusons, your McCoys and so on, obviously they've got the club at heart as well. So you've got these guys that are obviously learning from them, and you've got a really nice mix, I think, between the two of them.
Okay, okay. Some of those culture changes, though, Andy, were not easy to embed. You know, as soon as we'd later say, you know, getting yourself full of drink two or three times a week is not going to make you a better player on a Saturday afternoon. Maybe what was professional prerequisite in Serie A was a foreign language in Scotland, second nature in Empoli, not so in East Kilbride. Start of December, let's go back a wee bit, 5th of December, McCoys and Durant charged with breach of the peace and assault after a fight with an 18-year-old in a chip shop. Ted McMinn was also questioned. Durant later cleared in court, but McCoys was convicted of minor assault and fined £150. Durant wrote later, Ali McCoys saved my life that night. He was in crutches at the time. He was an ankle injury. But again, similar incident happened in Airdrie, would happen in Airdrie the following season, leading Durant to suggest he might be best leaving the city, this kind of constant target on the back. For all those changes to diet, Andy, and sleeping habits and flip-flops and whatever else, the Glasgow culture and its microscopic focus are always likely to provide a wee bit of resistance.
I think this was the kebab shop incident, wasn't it?
It was indeed, yeah.
So, my recollection is that Durant and McCoys were lucky boys, because we're talking about Souness and the culture and the winning, you know, winning is everything. The renewed discipline that he brought in, the fact that everything is, you know, this is what I learned in Italy and you need to adapt it. Now, going out to a kebab shop, getting drunk and then having a wee scrap wasn't part of that, as you say, Martin. It was a total antithesis of it. And, you know, lesser players would have been out in their arse, I've got to say. I think because Durant was special, Souness knew he was special, there was probably a wee bit of, you know, no throwing the baby out with the bathwater there. McCoys less so, because McCoys did we know, and Souness wasn't quite as harmonious as it could have been. Stage of the season probably played a big part, and my recollection was they were very, very lucky, because McMinn, to a lesser extent, I mean, he fell foul of Souness. Am I right in saying that? His off-field discipline was part of the reason.
He ended up going to Seville, didn't he, with Big Jock?
Did, yeah.
You know, for 150 or whatever, yeah.
And there we have misbehaviour, but Souness will cut who he thinks is expendable. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right. Durant and McCoys were probably going nowhere. They were fined.
I think they were fined a significant amount, which obviously we'll find later on the season how that goes. But I think the biggie as well, Martin, is in one way you learn too. And if you think later on with the likes of Gascoigne and things like that, so there was you can think of the hot-headed, it would be a case of that's it, you're out. You know, but again, I think he realises the value at that point in time. But I think the point I'm trying to make is, but he did keep pushing that, look, this is unacceptable. Yeah. And, you know, these guys have got to, you know, improve themselves, yeah.
None of this was ideal preparation, I guess, for the trip to Germany. Second leg of that UEFA Cup match, 1-1 at Ibrox, as we discussed last week. The away goal lost, so we'll need one. Souness kind of rushed himself back from that Achilles operation, give them some kind of experience. Alan, from what I can make out, a very impressive performance by Rangers. Quality in the final third was missing, 0-0. And that moment of carelessness at Ibrox making all the difference. One journalist said, it would, of course, be the game's unlikeliest transfer deal. Uh-huh. But if the Ibrox club had Mo Johnson, they might still be in the competition. Or maybe a different referee. Rangers down to 9 men. Stuart Munro saw red for retaliation. He was kicked by Winkold whilst he was lying on the floor. Cooper was sent off for asking the Belgian referee if he was allowed to send any Germans off, although I believe that the language he used was not something you would expect on a kind of diplomatic mission. And the Rangers players were gutted. You know, Butcher was in tears after this. And another season where Rangers were out of Europe before Christmas. Your recollections of that night?
Absolutely outclassed them. From the outset, they targeted Cooper, obviously. And that's the thing. Cooper was now playing freely again, like he had when he first. I mean, some of Cooper's football at that point in time. But I think they'd done him some like three times within 5 minutes. Some of the challenges were terrible, and they were just continually, you know, having a go at various. I think McCoist actually hit the bar early on as well. Yeah. Rangers had 6 or 7 good chances. Mm. They had a number of them as well, Martin, those ones that just went across the face of the goal and just couldn't get in the end of. I think Berisha probably had maybe a couple of chances, that's it. But Rangers totally played them off the park. But the challenges that they were putting in were absolutely horrendous. And then what was happening as well is the Rangers player would get booked. Obviously, the Berisha guy wouldn't, hence the frustration that it went on. Yeah, the Stuart McCall, when he actually... Stuart McCall was down on the ground, the guy's actually fouling him.
He
ended up getting that one. But in terms of the football as well, that's what gave me a wee bit of a... Really disappointed not going through. But Rangers played really, really well. And as you say, it was only that silly mistake in the first leg, really, that's caused us to go out there.
Andy, there's a bit of the Tartan Army sob story about this. You know, we were great, honest on our way home. As we will see over the course of this year, the Rangers European story isn't overly impressive. Mm. I do wonder though if this is one of the real underrated near misses. Mönchengladbach would beat Vitória de Guimarães in the quarterfinals. They're better than Boavista, but I wouldn't have thought that would have been an impossible task should we have met them as well later in that season, which would have set us up, if the draw worked out the same way, with a two-legged semi-final against Dundee United for a place in the UEFA Cup final. Jeez. This is one that just doesn't get talked about when we do ruminate over those what could have beens. You think this is a bit underrated?
I think it's a case that it represented progress, Martin. I think the year before we went out with an absolute one party, a kind of average Spanish team, Osasuna, wasn't it? And yeah. Here we were, we'd obviously beat Tampere, the Finnish team, which was expected. We'd beat Boavista, which was a result. And then we'd kind of went toe-to-toe with Borussia Mönchengladbach. And I think the feeling was that we had been, I'm trying to think of a phrase, but we'd been cheated. I don't know. Something tells me that Belgian ref later get done the corruption. I may be wrong.
Semi-final, I think, or a later. He did actually. Is it £25,000 or whatever, apparently?
Right.
Yeah. There was some creative stuff at that point, Andy. That's right. Allegedly. Yeah.
So the one that resonates with me as a similarity is the Bayern Munich Champions League with Advocat, where we go toe-to-toe, we come away with the game thinking we deserve to get through there because we've went toe-to-toe with a really good team. And no came away with the result. So, as gotten as it is, you have some heart, and you know, on another night you go through. Yeah. And given that there was no group stages or anything at that time, and as we've seen with Dundee United that season, they went all the way to the final. And is it one to get away? Probably, but you know, ultimately we're only good enough to get past Borussia, despite the referee. And it was about a sure grapes, you know, and that wasn't really what Sunish's thing was about. He didn't come away saying, "Ah, well, you know, we were cheated." I think he was of the type that just, you know, you either get through or you don't, and you make your own luck kind of style. Yeah. So I don't remember it ever. What I remember for that year was that the league was the thing. And
well, this going is out the
there
thing.
Was there a disaster?
That's the thing, and Sunish absolutely doesn't. He doesn't fine. The Rangers players were the club was fined £5,000. And the players, I mean, Monroe was banned for 4 European games. It was incredible.
Ridiculous. Yeah.
It really was. But as soon as didn't apply any extra ones, he didn't make any excuses. What I would say, even if we had done that, because, you know, there's, let's be honest, counterfactual history is a nice bit of fun. It may have exhausted us a wee bit or drained the resources for the league campaign, which was hotting up as 86 turned into 1987 and Rangers faced Celtic on New Year's Day.
Soonest with the shot. There was a deflection. That's it in. It's there. Flack has scored for Rangers. Well, you know, the man I think Rangers should give credit to for that, of course, is the captain, Terry Butcher, with that near post back header. It always looked as if it might be put in, and Flack made absolutely sure. Willie are playing some superb football, engineered mainly by the man spraying out that pass at the moment, Souness. Now Cooper. Ooh, it's there. Number two, Ali McCoist. Difficult enough on a day like today, but he should have got it, and there was McCoist to make it number two.
Okay, 2-0. Huge, huge game, Andy. Graham Souness' Old Firm debut at the, fourth attempt now this season for suspension and injury reasons. Both goals are scrappy, but Rangers are excellent from what I can see. Souness is just imperious. The margin was just far greater than two goals that afternoon. I want to ask so much about this game. Were you both there, presumably?
Aye. Andy was a lucky one. I, Martin, for my sins, had booked a holiday in the Algarve and flew out after the United game, a couple of days after. So we were down in the Algarve. Margaret and I, on New Year's Day, were on the beach with champagne. There was no mobile phones, no internet. So at one point, I went back up to a telephone box and used my, would it be a Scudos or whatever?
Would it be?
Phoned back home. David Best, Reading Rangers. David got my season ticket for his, I think he took his girlfriend. But I phoned back. My dad told me the score. I went back down to the beach and there was some more champagne. So I thoroughly enjoyed that New Year. Gutted I missed it. But then, obviously, I watched it when I came back.
And is it as good as it looks in the highlights, or as popular myth makes out?
I think it has gained a bit of a glow over time, because it was only 2-0, but what captured the imagination that day and is remembered as soon as, because
yeah.
It was Baxter-esque. Now, even you, Alan, I don't know if you're old enough to remember Baxter, but you obviously hear about Baxter, you see the film, and you get a sense of a guy that, you know, is totally imperious, takes the piss out of the opposition and is untouchable. That was Souness that day, because, you know, McStay was the much vaunted, even then, and McStay was a good player.
Good player, yeah.
He was a good player, but He was the maestro, they called him, and he was vaunted as the next big thing in British football. And, you know, there wasn't a single Celtic player that could love Rangers, love Souness that day. No. And if you go into YouTube, and I'd implore you to do so, and watch the game, you'll see exactly what I mean. Where basically Souness stops time at one point. When have you ever seen anybody put their foot in the ball, lift a leg, take a kid on, kick it, no do it, turn, change direction, and then spray a big pass out?
Yeah.
It was something that wasn't quite seen in a normal rough and tumble Celtic Rangers game at that time. And I mean, we scored two goals. One, I can't remember the same. I can only remember Bonner dropping the ball quite comedically for a corner. But we were well worthy of the 2-0. Should have been more, probably.
We Fleck at the other one, that's right, yeah.
Fleck, yeah. And this was where, it was about momentum, Martin. This is where what we thought was happening was kind of proved to be true. We were going to change gear. We were going to shift gear and leave these folk in our wake. And it was a very good day.
Well, the immediate reaction, interesting you mentioned Baxter, Archie McPherson used to do a piece to camera on Sports Scene after the game, whatever game he was at. And he likened Souness to me. I've never seen a Rangers player dominate an Old Firm game in 20 odd years, with an obvious reference to Baxter. The press are funny. They do point out that You know, the margin was huge, but profit margins might have been the biggest factor. Money Talks is one of the headlines. It's checkmate for Rangers, Aces, another. A wee bit contradictory to the summer when they said that, you know, you can't buy success. You won't be able to do that. So, you know, make your mind up, boys. The importance of it. I'm fascinated by this notion of pivotal turning points in a season. There are others, and there's quite a bit of debate about this, and we probably start the next episode with an equally, if not more important, match. Mm-hmm. But Smith and Souness, when they did a BBC Scotland retrospective in 2007, said, you know, that as much as anything else gave us an enormous boost, and then it led us to believe that we could go on and win the championship. That was Smith. And Souness said, we knew that once we go on to their coattails, they wouldn't be able to handle the pressure. We just went from strength to strength. So it was five with a game in hand. It's now three with a game in hand. Andy Rangers are absolutely breathing down their necks. This feels like a reality. I do have a clear memory of my dad coming home that night with the snow on his scarf, because it was a kind of snowy, wet day, wasn't it? Beaming, absolutely beaming. And he said, we're going to win the league. We weren't even top, but it was just this feeling of direction. Alan's kind of mentioned that. Is that real? Did you go home thinking, Andy, we're on for this now?
Well, I'm a youngster at that time, so I think we're going to win the league anyway without really knowing the reality of things. But I do remember that, and I used the word there, and I can't look at the vocabulary to think in a better word. It was momentum. It's basically things were hotting up, and they were slowing down, Celtic, I mean. And there was belief. There was belief for day one. And even when we were 7 or 8 points behind, you know, it was still 2 points for a win back then, wasn't it? So it was quite a margin, yeah. But there was still belief. And it was just a case of, you know, as I keep saying in this series, you just knew this place was going to explode. Mm-hmm. And you just kept that belief. And I think, personally, I think the fact that you could sign a player at any time had a lot to do with that, because, you know, it wasn't unsurprising for Rangers to go out and buy a player at any point in the season. And the Roberts signing was kind of proof positive of that. I think we might have done that with Jimmy Nicol after the season started. I might be wrong. But that kind of, it was knowing you had that in your arsenal, that we could just go out and buy a player at any given point, gave you this kind of maybe misplaced belief that we were going to do something. But that game itself was pivotal, as you say, because you could see it with your own eyes that they were sitting there. And the Celtic Wiki, which is a fantastic resource, I implore everybody to go and look it up. They've got an article. The headline is Rangers in England 2, Celtic in Patrick 0. There's a picture there, and it's Graham Roberts after he's completely crumpled Owen Archdeacon, and he's looking at him as if, you know, you're a piece of shit. He's looking down on them in the grin.
Yeah.
That was the kind of mentality that was coming through in the team, and it was spreading to the terraces.
That's what I mean. Are you feeling that, Alan? Even you, as this prototype Tory on the Portuguese coast?
Yeah, from my point of view, I think, as Andy said, it was the momentum. I didn't think, like your dad, that's it, we're going to win the league. But what I did feel is, like you had said, we'd been chasing them. They were beginning to slip up. It was a controlled win. Obviously, when I came back and seen it, it was controlled. I'd seen loads of Old Firm wins, even when we weren't doing well, you know, Drazer game and so on. But this one just seemed different. This one did seem like we've been chasing you, watch this now. And there was Celtic mixed day, the lot of them. I think Johnson was playing his bit, McCoy, but you could tell they were now looking at us thinking, oh my God, they're up a different level. So really controlled from our point of view, and it was just a case of kind of keeping things going.
Fixtures were thrown a bit of havoc in January. It was an absolute freeze in January 1987. Rangers unaffected though. That form just kept a pace. Graham Roberts scored the only goal against Motherwell at Fir Park, an absolute wonder strike from 35 yards. And poor Clybank again, 5-0 at Ibrox, another Robert Fleck hat-trick. And on the same day, Celtic lose 3-2 at Dundee United. We're now in touching distance, gentlemen, and a win over Hamilton Accies at Ibrox in mid-January could put Rangers ahead on top of the table for the first time at that stage of the season since 1978, Alan. 2-0 win. Okay, a few things I want to ask about this game. I think it showcases exactly this kind of split personality of Rangers team. 2-0, easy win. Opener from Durant is gorgeous, absolutely superb.
Mm-hmm.
Just a really good football and performance. But Coyce, of course, would score the second. But with all that in the bag, we're going to go top of the league. As the game wore on, unnecessary and ridiculous ill-discipline. Graham Roberts sent off for a second yellow with just 15 minutes to go, and then Durant sent off for an outrageous tackle on Albert Craig. Second time that season, Rangers have got two players sent off in a game. It could have happened more often. And this, the success that, that must feel for you guys, I'm too young to really appreciate it, to be there right in front of you, but it's always balanced on this razor's edge. Will this team mess it up?
Yeah, and obviously at that point there was a real buzz because, as you say, this was going to be our chance. It was a really bad tempered match from the outset. I think they obviously, I don't know what happened. I think there's a couple of kind of challenges and so on that they weren't kind of too happy about, obviously. Then what happened was, I remember, I think Jerry McCabe came on as a sub, one of their guys, Barr, I think, got stretchered off. Big Butcher had done it kind of 50-50 on him, you know, at the time. So he came on. And as you say, everything was going okay. The Graham Roberts one, the second booking, was an absolute joker, the sending off. I think it was in our box. And he just kind of touched shoulders with the guy. The boy went down. And obviously Graham Roberts went off. I think what I spotted, we were over in the Govan front at the time because we used to move about with the Rover season ticket. And I saw, I think it was Jerry McCabe and one of the other ones. I don't know if it was Sprott or Pelosi or whatever. Both as if, we've got him, we've done him. They were laughing. You could see it. And obviously, Durant had spotted it too. So as Graham Roberts went off, I think within about 4 minutes or so, Durant just went, the ball kind of went in and half the guy into. That was the real stupid thing. Durant, the red mist, just done that one and he went off too. So in terms of being ahead in the league, absolutely fantastic. But again, as Durant went off, the two Hamilton players as well, we laugh at each other, you know, as if walked into that one. And I think after the game as well, there was a lot of kind of bad feeling as well, Martin, between obviously Rangers players and, you know, the kind of Hamilton Accies mob too. Yeah. And that, in a way, it didn't carry forward to the next one, but that was mentioned before the, you know, when we played them a wee bit later on that month.
Mm. 13th time that season, Andy. Ibrox is a sellout. All ticket. Unheard of. Again, you're young, but are you able at this time to really appreciate just how different that is? Is your dad talking about how different Ibrox feels, continually being full and tickets being like gold dust in some cases?
I'm very aware of it because we're talking about the need to get a season ticket, which was never the case before. You know, this is just to paint a picture for listeners that maybe don't have the concept. We weren't really a season ticket supporter at that time. You mentioned just your Rover ticket there, Alan. That kind of sums it up. You could go anywhere in a stand, for example, but we knew it was in the post. This is about the club changing. This is how we know things are changing. We're like that. I'm going to have to fork out for a season ticket next year. It was a big change for supporters to do that.
I mean, just to add to that, a great point, Andy, because up to then, certainly for me, for 1970, you just went, you paid to go in, you managed to get tickets, say for Old Firm games if you needed it. I think what happened was when Souness was coming, I think it was myself and Davey Best and another guy, Barry, we went with. We were like, maybe want to think about a season ticket. And I had mentioned to Margaret, this is going to get busy because of the hype. You could feel it during it. And I think it was £60 it cost me, or £66 for that season ticket. And I remember in the press them saying that was the record. It was 6,000, you know, at that, obviously that summer. And I think you're right, Andy. I think before then you'd be lucky if there had been 1,000. And it was it certainly wasn't the working class guys like us that would normally get them.
It was a novelty. It was a novelty to have a Zine ticket. So that's how I know, Martin, to answer your question, we knew that was going to be the case. Away games, slightly less so, because the stadiums were all terraced and there was never an issue. Apropos of nothing, the Graham Roberts screamer that you talk of at Motherwell, that game was never televised. There was no cameras at it at all to record it. And we missed the bus and we never seen that goal. And I've never seen, well, I'll never see that goal now. My dad got the wrong time for the bus and we were still on like a couple of diddies in Argyll Road and Saltcoats and that. Missed this bus. So every time somebody brings up that screamer, Martin, my dad gets it in the neck.
Yeah, quite rightly. So it was after 5 or 6 clean sheets that Chris Woods was in Walter Smith's ear, asking if the British what the British record was and how far he still had to go. I think Walter quite curtly dismissed him, told him to go away, but promised that you know he'd come back to him if he was ever close. By late January, he was close indeed. Although there was a drop point, a 0-0 draw at home to Aberdeen meant that Rangers actually fell back behind Celtic, 2 points behind, but with a game in hand. But this is increasing and increasing, and that 0-0 draw took Woods' shutout to 13 consecutive matches in all competitions. And yeah, but we'll talk about the record in a minute, but the significance of that, it goes beyond, you know, the chance to meet Roy Castle and Record Breakers or something like that. The trivia isn't really that important. The winter in Scotland is tough. It makes or breaks champions so often. And this was the bedrock for the big change. Rangers are miles behind as the autumn draws to a close, and now we're jostling for top spot. Again, was there a sense, guys, as December went into January, and there's maybe a bit of chat about this record, that just how good defensively we are? Was anyone talking about that? Alan first.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, obviously, I wasn't like your dad at the start of January. By the time we come to this and the way we've been going, and as you said, defensively, it was just like, you've got probably, I would have said, the best goalkeeper in Britain at that point in time as well. And just this defence, you were getting, it was a wee bit like that freak season we had last year, Martin, where you would have games where teams wouldn't have a shot at us, or maybe one or two. And because we had this really good keeper as well, things were so comfortable for us. So, yeah, it was definitely a case of, when's the record going to come? What is it? And obviously things moved on to the Hamilton Accies Scottish Cup game. Yeah,
Andy, was this providing that sense of momentum that you're talking about? It's just that we're just never going to concede.
Well, the way I would put it is that it was a novelty for many Rangers fans, certainly my age. But you know, if you're 20 year old, you've not seen Rangers really compete for a league for 10 years, 9 years, and along with that, you've not seen them hold 11 games without losing a goal. So it was just this new mantra, and it kind of speaks into the thing I'm saying about Souness, winning. That was new to us. That mentality was something that never really been drilled in. And he also had this build from the back. Kind of cliche that he bought boots, he bought woods. Everything started for the back, and, you know, we were seeing it. And it ties in with what we're saying about the Celtic game, momentum. By Christ, you can't know win a league if you're not losing a goal. So it was stuff like that. It was just building belief, and everything was fresh and new. And at some points, despite the fact you weren't running away with the league, you kind of pinched yourself to say, right, this is something special that's happening here.
And remember the chat about, because Woods already had a record. He was the British record. He was the world's most expensive goalkeeper. And this is ridiculous, what Rangers doing. But as soon as, very clearly, was it from the outset, you need to invest in the back. And this is now paying off. 31st of January then, guys, at Ibrox, Hamilton are back on Scottish Cup duty. And it could be broken that day. And it was the 44th minute. The crowd roared their appreciation of Woods, who I think at that point had so little to do that he could well be classed as a spectator as well. And he became the record holder for clean sheets. And a kind of nice full stop, as I said, in any debate about the merits of that investment. Rangers are the best keeper in Britain, and it was 0-0 at the time, but even if McCoist or Fleck or Cooper, whomever, turned up and scored the winner to send Rangers into the next round, it would still be Chris Woods that would get the headlines the next morning. Only they didn't, and he wouldn't. 1,196 minutes Woods lasted without being beaten. But with 20 minutes of that cup tie remaining, Rangers, despite all the possession and all the attempts on Davy McKellar's goal, still searching for a breakthrough. Hamilton Aki's launched a long free kick into the Rangers' half, which somehow got lost under the feet of Dave McPherson and presented Adrian Sprott with his chance to produce that moment of glory and shame in equal measure. The only goal of the game, and Rangers were sensationally knocked out of the cup. Humiliation was the Evening Times back page, printed onto T-shirts by the Willie McMalloy Celtic Supporters Club. The comparisons, Andy, with Berwick were immediate, quite obvious. 20 years, of course, passing since that time. It's a wee bit unfair. I mean, Hamilton are in the Premier Division. Berwick were a league below. After all this progress that we're talking about, how much of a shot was this afternoon?
This was big. This was really big. And it's important, you mentioned it there, the context. That somebody looking at this historically might say, well, hold on, Hamilton are in the same league as you. So how can it be that much a shock?
Still part-time.
And so on paper, it looks like, you know, something that could happen. It's like a modern-day equivalent of us getting knocked out by, you know, Ross County or something like that. But this was massive. This was absolutely massive because we've spoke about in the series about how Rangers had become box office. It totally transformed every aspect of Scottish football, including the media and the headlines, and there was just a thirst for anything to do with Rangers soon as we were box office. And for us to get knocked out at home against Hamilton Accies in the midst of the Woods record, as we were talking about there, was seismic, absolutely seismic. And I'm not going to say it was a JFK moment, but I can remember vividly where I was because I wasn't at the game. Because it was, I never went, and my dad went, but I never went because it was kind of viewed as a, you know, we'll be a Hamilton Accies and we'll be, aye, formality. And I was in Harris of Salkuts, which was a TV shop, TV and electric shop, and I was in there with my mum and my gran, and the results were coming through on the telly. And I'm 11, and I'm standing there, and the guy, the salesman in the shop, who I now know very well, is a guy called Jack Blades, who eventually became my club. He's looking at me as a grown man, and this wee boy looking at the screen, and we're kind of looking at each other as if, what the fuck is this? You know, because it's coming through Hamilton 1, Rangers nothing. And it was that kind of moment where like, we kind of believe this. And I'm lying to my mum, we've just been beaten. She doesn't get the gravity of it. But it was massive, Martin. It really was a big, big thing. And I wouldn't say it knocked us in terms of belief, but it was certainly a bolt for the blue. And, you know, that's why it's remembered. That's why Adrian Sprott is a name is remembered. And they probably always will be remembered because it was a major, major upset. And that can't be understated.
Alan?
I'm just trying to recover from it. Memory. Aye, Bobby Clark had the record, and Big Woods obviously beat that one. I remember being at the game and looking at the scoreboard, and we were kind of watching, because as you said, they'd said, I think I'd say 31 minutes, or whatever it was anyway, but it was like, once it gets to that one, Big Woods has got the record, and as you say, you know, just all the applause and everything, this is fantastic. And because of we were the £2 million team, really against the £50,000 one that it took for them. I've had some low points watching Rangers, but at that point in time, geez. And I think because of the way things had been going too, Martin, you know how I'm usually a kind of glass, don't jinx it kind of guy, but I'm a kind of glass half empty. But at this point in time, you're thinking, this is great. I think Celtic were also drawn with Aberdeen as well. So you're thinking when they draw came out, brilliant. We've got Accies at home. They could maybe come a cropper. You know, let's go for the cup too. But I remember the ball came down, and I think, as you say, big David McPherson went under his foot. Obviously, they went and scored. But the amount of saves that Dave McKellar, I think, had, we absolutely, you know, we just battered them, but couldn't get the goal. I think the biggie for me too, Martin, was here we go again. It was my first wedding anniversary that day. We've booked Chim's restaurant in Hamilton, across from where parts of Hamilton showroom is. So Margaret and I go over there. Davey Cooper was in Chim's restaurant that night as well. I didn't bother him, but Davey looked like shocked too. But I remember Margaret saying, our first anniversary, you've just wasted it. You'd think we were at a funeral and not for a nice meal. Do you know what I mean? It was just absolutely, just completely shocked by it all, yeah.
You never really grow out of football results ruining special occasions, do you? A massive, massive story.
Oh, and
could have been a setback. Yeah, the Berwick comparisons, as I said, understandable journalism, especially with the 20 years and everything else. The reaction was not the same. And this is what I found interesting. We talked about Souness probably not handling the media well in terms of, you know, managers speak to the players, of course, behind closed doors, but they also speak to the players in public. There are public messages there for them. And, you know, the two examples where it's kind of backfired. Now, internally...
It learns this time, Martin.
I think it does, yeah. Internally, he puts his foot through a television in the dressing room, and he was furious. He gets some stuff out there. He was moaning, you know, losing that the goal was ridiculous. I spent a lot of money getting this defence right. I guess the soonest that we've seen so far might have said, right, McPherson, you're out now. But he doesn't. He will get rid of him, correctly, in the summer. But he'll keep him, and to good effect, as the season would wear on, as we'll see. McCoyston Fleck, he supports immediately. They'll be playing next week. Of course, the big Berwick comparison with the two forwards being axed immediately. And Souness knew, as much as Liverpool career was glittering, never won the FA Cup, and he suffered some shocks with Liverpool. He understands how British Cup competitions can work. There's no panic. And his public messaging, Smith's public messaging, appears to be evidence of them realising that what they see outside does have an impact inside. And they would have to get it right this time. And Andy, it's been a roller coaster season already, starting with Easter Road in August and the ups and downs since then. He plays this well, though.
See, in many ways, Martin, he was more pragmatic than the support and the media. Mm. And it was probably the opposite of what you would have put your money on if you'd kind of run this scenario as a potential thing that would happen. How would Souness react to it? So, looking back now, was it maybe the stage of the season? Did he know that, you know, these things happen, as you say, given his own experiences down south? Was it just so big that he had to downplay it because to actually exacerbate it again by giving a kind of seal of approval to the hysteria would have made it worse? I don't know. And I wonder, as you say, what Smith's input would have been to it. But whatever he did, it was the correct call because, you know, we were too deep into the season to pop up and start again and have a total knee-jerk clear out, if you want, or even, you know, Souness's want was to have personal vendettas against players he felt let them down. You know, we've seen it later on with Roberts, we've seen it with other players that, you know, you crossed them, you didn't generally get a second chance, Durant McCoist accepted, but there was players there that you might have thought he's going to cull because of that. And he never did that, and it ultimately it helped their season. So, was this a sign of him maturing? Maybe. Maybe it was an exception. I think it was an exception because we've seen plenty more of the kind of firebrand react of Souness after this.
Well, we would, and as the years went on. But in this season, this important season, and we'll come to, again, other bits of evidence that I think him and Smith, the handling of the outside is a very interesting, but I think this is a bit of a departure. Alan, at least for the moment, and we know what's going to come in other seasons, he is growing into the kind of prime minister that the Rangers manager actually is, and no one it's underrated just how big a deal that job is. It's not just picking the team, or in his case, playing as well. And he takes that on his shoulders that week.
He does. And you mentioned the Berwick one. If you remember, obviously, you know, when things happened at Berwick, obviously it was people above. I think the good thing is that Souness, between obviously him and Holmes as well, they were very tight, weren't they? And obviously had made that decision. Now, the other thing too, Walter Smith, between the two of them, you can imagine. So occasionally, I would imagine behind the scenes, if Souness went a wee bit there, Walter would pull him back and vice versa. So that was a great combination. And you mentioned about those two strikers, if they had done something silly like they did in the 60s, you've got 53 goals between McCoist this season and Robert Fleck. So good call. And I think the way they managed this one definitely shows, you know, he is definitely getting the right direction there.
That'll do us, gentlemen. Thank you very much. Always a pleasure to speak to you. You'll be back on soon, I'm sure. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you. I enjoyed it up until that very last Hamilton one, but I'm just going to have a wee lie down, Martin, but yeah. I really enjoyed that. Thanks, Andy, as well, mate.
Sorry about the trigger. Thank you, Andy.
Martin, I might keep going. It's just getting good now.
Yeah, I know. Well, we will keep going. We will. But that week, as we said, Rangers, well, Souness and Smith handled the situation perfectly, and they needed to, because Rangers are back in the position of being 2 points behind, but with a game spare, this title race is precariously poised. And the following weekend, the first weekend in February, would see Rangers visit Tynecastle, where they hadn't won a league match since 1977, and where Hearts hadn't suffered any kind of defeat for nearly 2 years. And with Celtic at home to the always generous St Mirren, it looked exactly like the kind of situation when some of that ground that had been made up so well would be handed back. Yet another step backwards after so many positive strides. It would be the biggest test of the season. How they handled it and the run all the way to Pittodrie will be covered next week. Until then, bye for now.
That was a Heart and Hand production.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.